Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Today, we're sitting down with Justin Ryder, the new managing director of Court Square Theater. Here in downtown Harrisonburg, this wonderful new manager has 40 years of experience in theater, including on and off Broadway productions. His previous role is executive director of the Masonic Theater Preservation Foundation. Justin brings a wealth of knowledge and passion to this historic venue. We'll dive into his vision for the theater, the role of the arts in the community, and what exciting things are ahead. Welcome to the show, Justin. It's great to have you on today.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
I know this is really pretty crazy because this is February. And you've just been here since October of last year, so 4 months.
4.5 months.
It's been a whirlwind or no?
A little bit. Not necessarily a whirlwind. There was a lot of programming in place already when I got here. Mm-hmm. So it gave me kind of an opportunity to understand the Arts Council of the Valley, understand what operational challenges we have, that kind of thing. So having some of that programming there was a good thing for me, just to be able to get my feet under the ground and figure out what needed to happen.
Okay, good. Well, I'm really excited to get into your story and your vision and what's happening and what we can look forward to. But before we do, laughers, real quick, we have been accepted by the Audible Creator Program, which is super exciting, but even better, they are offering a free audiobook to you, so you don't have to listen to me all the time between episodes. You can try that out and give it a listen and support this podcast. We would really appreciate that. So big shout out to Audible. We're so thankful. Okay, Justin, tell me where your passion for theater began.
Well, I did my first production on stage when I was 9 years old at Missouri Rep. In Awe Wilderness. And I think, you know, both my parents were into community theater. And,
really?
Yeah, my dad pretty heavily. And so that kind of started that process. Mm-hmm. And then I started singing in a boys' choir at an early age in Kansas City, Missouri. And that sort of led to child roles in opera with the Lyric Opera. And then eventually sang in the chorus at the Kentucky Opera in Louisville. So I guess it was in my blood because of my parents. And certainly opera was a big part of my growing up.
I had no idea. I don't know a whole ton about opera. But I imagine there, you know, I know in general people are, I don't know all the things. So bear with me, tenors and I don't know what else.
Yes.
Yeah, talk to me about that.
I ended up being a tenor.
Okay.
I started as a treble, which is a male soprano.
Okay.
And the boys choir, and then obviously when my voice changed. But opera for me was just sort of the biggest and boldest in production values, and that really appealed to me. If you're going to do an opera like Aida, you know, we had elephants and horses and all kinds of things on stage. So that's sort of what drew me to opera. And I went to school actually as a voice major. I wanted to be Enrico Caruso, who was a very famous opera singer. And when I got there, I got through, you know, first semester, and then they stuck in theory. And that's when I decided that I didn't have the brain for theory. And I think at that time, I really didn't have the responsibility or the discipline to be a professional opera singer. Mm. So I ended up going backstage at the theater and have remained there most of my life.
I see. Now, again, this is where my curious human comes out. I don't know what theory means at all.
So theory is in music, when you're reading music or writing music, there's theory. So how it's written is very mathematical.
Oh.
Things like a German augmented fourth, how you read in signature time, that kind of thing. So I'm not a big expert on theory because it just really did not connect with me at all.
You were like, this is not my bag, baby.
It was not my bag, for sure.
So how I would like to talk to you a little bit more about your Broadway experience. Can you give us some highlights about that?
Yeah, I never actually did a show on Broadway. Worked in and around them, bunch of off-Broadway shows, Jelly Roll and Tap Dogs. I did a couple big changeovers for Stomp. So a lot of off-Broadway work, which was, you know, production stage managing, follow spot, electrician, grunt. I had finished a stint in Louisville as the technical director at the Kentucky Center for the Arts, and I'd been there about 8 years, and I really wanted to do the New York thing. And so I went from being sort of a big fish in a little pond to a guppy in the ocean, and could just take work however I could get it. And so, you know, when you're working that much, you don't get to see a lot of theater because you're working. So that was always kind of a bummer. We always like to say in the theater, when you had the time to go see a show, you didn't have the money. And when you were working and getting money, you couldn't go see shows. So,
yeah, caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. I mean, New York's it's a tough business. And theater is a tough business, but you can have a really nice career in it if you really work at it.
How long were you in New York?
Well, I went to school there. Then I went to Kentucky for 8 years. And then I went back in 94 and then ended up going out on tour in 97. So I was back there for about 3 years. And then once I got on tour, I was on tour until 2002 and then ended up in Dayton, Ohio at the Schuster Center.
Okay. And what were you doing on the tour? What show production was that?
Production manager. I started out with Cirque Ingenue and then Tap Dogs and Annie.
Oh, wow.
And then Cabaret.
Oh, great shows.
Jekyll and Hyde. And then ended up going back there after Dayton and becoming a production manager where I built the shows that were going out. So wow. South Pacific and some other big ones like that.
Where did you go on tour? What was
all 50 states.
Okay.
And I took Rent to Japan, and I took Hairspray to China, and my wife took Shrek to Kuala Lumpur. So we got to see the world through theater, which is great.
What's your favorite place you've been to out of all of those adventures?
I used to say that Austin, Texas was one of my favorite towns.
Really?
I really like the people there. I like the vibe there. I love London very much. It's just a cool town. You know, we love Italy. We love Florence. I mean, I've got a lot of places since I've been so many and seen so many theaters. There are a lot of places that are wonderful in our country.
There are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your wife is in theater, too.
Yeah, we met on the show Annie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, who noticed who first?
it kind of happened at the same time.
Really?
Yeah, I was in a ballroom in New York at the Hotel Edison, and we were getting ready to meet the parents of the children we were taking out on tour.
Mm-hmm.
And she came through the door with a bunch of balloons for the kids, and we'd been talking on the phone, and we both looked at each other and went, okay, here we go. So it started out pretty quickly.
And how long have you been together now?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no. Might be watching,
I'm pretty
good
at it. let's see. It's 25 years we've known each other and been married for 24.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you live in Stanton now?
We do live in Stanton. We moved there in 2011 when I was president and CEO of Heifetz International Music Institute.
I want to talk a little bit about that because before we recorded, I was sharing with you, that was a recent discovery for me that even existed here. So can you share with the laughers what that institute is?
Yeah.
And what it's all about?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. It's a 6-week summer program for the world's finest viola, violin, and cello players, mostly young ones, college students, and they now have a program for little ones.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is it brings in the world's finest teachers from schools like Peabody and you know, major Juilliard. And wow, those teachers are there for usually a week, sometimes 2 weeks. And so these different teachers will come in and they'll work with the students over those 6 weeks. There's, I don't know, 80 different concerts over the 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these kids are just amazingly talented. But what makes HIFET so unique is their communications program. So not only are they working with their instrument with an instructor, they're working in other disciplines like dance, mm-hmm. Like vocal, learning about their bodies. So getting them out of that shell where they're just up there playing the heck out of a violin and more expressive of what the music is meaning to them. They all have to speak before their piece and talk about the piece and what it means to them. They bring in a blues artist to work with them.
I love that.
Dance instructor. So yeah, it's a whole broad thing. And you really, after 6 weeks, you get to see them really morph into this, you know, even more expressive performer. So
I really, cool. I think that is very cool. I love the holistic renaissance approach to that 6 week program a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So they take over the campus of Mary Baldwin University for 6 weeks. And like I said, there are concerts every day. And there are actually concerts from the faculty too. So you're getting, you know, Carnegie Hall in Stanton over the course of the summer. So it's pretty neat.
That's pretty neat. Some people may not actually be familiar with Juilliard. I'm going to let you tell them a little bit more, but I have a small story for you about that. I wanted to be a Hollywood actress when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and ended up acting major first at West Virginia University. But I did go audition, or no, that's what this is going to get interesting. I went to go audition for Juilliard. I was young and stupid, and I thought I could memorize my Macbeth monologue on the way up.
Oh.
Right? Feeling me?
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into that room. If you've ever seen the movie Flashdance, when the dancer walks in the room and mm-hmm. there's the people behind the desk and they're staring at her.
Oh, yeah.
She kind of freezes.
Yep.
That's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tricky thing, acting and memorization, and it really is a skill. And mm-hmm. It's something you have to work at. Some actors, they'll say, you know, oh, it's easy for me. You know, it came easy. But I think there's really a lot of work and effort that goes into being a good, accomplished actor.
Yes, that was my baptism by fire that I put upon myself, really. And they were so kind. You know, I think they've experienced that before, and sometimes people are quite prepared and they're just nervous.
Oh, yeah.
And they were very kind to me and take your time, and it just wasn't working out for me. And I apologized and I left the room, and my mom was, how did it go? I said, it's terrible. Oh, you're being dramatic. You know, let's go get a corn dog. We'll be back to see if you're on the callback list. I said, Mom, it's absolutely impossible for me to be on that list. I didn't say anything.
No.
Except I'm sorry.
Can you remember your set? I mean, do you memorize your set when you're going on stage?
Yeah.
Stand up?
Well, yeah, it's that's a little bit of a mixed bag for it to feel normal, right? Mm-hmm. So my personal process, every comic has their own process. I have CPTSD, so it's best for me to write it down and mm-hmm. write it all out, punch it up, and then I create a set list like pretty much every comic does.
Yeah.
And then come out and be loose about that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
My mom was not a fan of stand-up comedy.
Really?
Yeah, she internalized the feeling, I think, when she was watching stand-up of this person up there trying to make people laugh, and it was kind of like an empathy, and she just couldn't handle it. You know, she just didn't understand and didn't like the feeling of watching someone struggle to make people laugh.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, so I think that's different. You know, yeah. Some of us love to make people laugh, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it does happen to people, you know, especially when they're starting out. You can see that more in open mics versus professional shows.
Right.
I mean, it happens. But.
And I love listening to some interviews from comics and their process with Jerry Seinfeld and all his 3x5 cards. And
those are helpful.
Yeah. There's a picture of him in front of the Minetta Lane Theater in New York with all his note cards on the street and him sitting in the middle of them, and it just takes up the whole block. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a great way to practice in between shows, basically, is having those and running them. When I was doing a lot of shows here, I would do that. I would do a drive before the show, before we drove over here from my house around Court Square and back. That was my practice, and I would be running my set, and then I'd get the equipment and come back over here and do the show.
There you go. Perfect.
Now, what drew you here to Harrisonburg, to Court Square Theater?
Well, I'd been at the Masonic Theater in Clifton Forge for about 4 years and had no intentions of being there that long. I really had kind of gone out on my own doing some leadership advisement, strategic planning, and working with boards in the nonprofit side of the world. And I went down to help them and ended up staying for 4 years. And then, you know, it was quite a commute. And then I heard that Jenny Burden, the executive director of Arts Council of the Valley, was looking for someone. And she and I had been on a couple of VCA grant review panels together and really liked her and liked her style. And so I said, hey, want to have a go at this? And so here I am.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Connections are everything. You don't know at the time when you're making a connection with someone where that's going to lead in the future, but we are all people and we can really help each other.
Absolutely.
Land on the bus where we should be. Mm-hmm. Right, so to speak. And then if we're on the wrong seat of the bus, we can go find the right seat.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on a bus in my Broadway touring career.
I bet. What was the most challenging part of touring,
So as the production stage manager, mm-hmm. I'm basically in charge of the show artistically. So I'm there to keep what the director or designers all put in place when we left the rehearsal hall. And so I've got rehearsals and all that good stuff. But the challenge is every theater is different. And so you have to walk into that theater that morning and know what pieces of the set you're not going to have because the wings are too small or there's not enough line sets to bring in and out the drop, so you might have to cut one. And then I have to figure out how all the actors are going to get on and off stage in a new venue. And so during the daytime, I'm talking with the dance captain who's on their bus coming to the theater. I'm already there about what we might have to change. And so at the beginning, when they get there, we might run a few of those numbers so that we know this piece of furniture is not going to be there, or this drop is not going to be here, or you've got to play it a little further upstage because this is where the drop lands. And so every day is a puzzle. And that was pretty much the most challenging part, but also the part that I enjoyed the most.
Why do you enjoy it the most?
It was the puzzle.
Okay, you love to solve puzzles.
It was the puzzle of putting, you know, 20 pounds in a 5-pound bag. And, you know, there were days that we played theaters that were the size of Court Square Theater. They had drops that you could use, but Court Square doesn't. But we traveled in three semis. Three semis of stuff is not going to fit in Court Square Theater.
No.
So you've got to figure out what you're going to bring in to make the show work.
Okay, a couple of things there. For laughers that may not be familiar with drops, what are drops?
So scenic drops are something that flies in and out during the show. So we don't have a fly loft here at Court Square Theater, but when you go to, you know, some of the bigger theaters in Richmond or in D.C., they've all, you know, 80 feet tall on stage. So those line sets can travel in and the drop can go all the way out so that the audience isn't seeing it.
I got you. And then for those laughers not familiar with Court Square Theater, because we have people listen to this from all over the world.
Yeah.
Can you talk about this space so they have some idea?
Yeah, this particular space was carved out of an old car dealership, which is pretty cool. So, and the cars were serviced on the second floor. So we have these monstrous I-beams that run across over the audience head and actually one on stage too. We do not have a fly loft in the Court Square Theater. It is what's called a thrust stage, so that we have an apron that comes out from the proscenium edge. So it's not really conducive to large-scale theater performances or opera. It becomes great for recital. It's great for music. It's great for stand-up. It's great for one person plays. It's pretty good for modern dance. Mm-hmm. It's not really big enough to really get a big ballet in here. It's a little on the smaller side. It's a 260 seats. And so we've got a lot of music series that we do.
Yeah. And yes, speaking of which, I think one of the most fascinating things about this theater is how long bluegrass has been here and how popular it is. Mm-hmm. I would love if you would share with our laughers a little bit more about that, especially those of you who are bluegrass fans. I think you're going to want to check this out.
Yeah, our bluegrass series is very, very popular. Arts Council of the Valley, which runs the theater, they're celebrating their 25th year. So
that's exciting.
It's pretty exciting and pretty special. But we have a long-standing bluegrass series, and usually we'll have one a month. And we do very well with those. Last weekend we had Cody Norris, who just won Entertainer of the Year from the Bluegrass Foundation.
That's great.
And we try to mix it up, a little bit of Americana, a little bit of bluegrass, a little bit of folk when we can get that. But we do have a really good following for our bluegrass series.
Yeah, that is, I need to come to one of those. I just know a lot about it. I've heard a lot about it and all great things. And it packs out all the time, from what I understand.
It does. It does. It does very well.
So I understand that if that is something you want to do, laughers, you should get your tickets early.
That's true. That's true. You should. Yeah. We've got Kayla Bailey coming up. We've got Country Gentleman coming up. We've got Irene Kelly. She's got a new album she's doing with her daughters and called Women of Kelly. So they'll be here in June, I think. And I've started booking fall of 25 and spring 26.
Yeah, that's, speaking of which, this is a very exciting time for you to be stepping in the 25th year anniversary too. Let's talk about what your vision is moving forward for this theater. And I know you have a vision, but you're also asking questions and working things through. But I'd just love to hear a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, this house, this theater, I call it house, has been primarily a movie theater for a long time. And I think many people in and around the Harrisonburg area see it as a place where they went to go see movies. I've pulled back on that a little bit. I think we might have a little bit of a perception problem, and people need to understand what Court Square Theater is all about. Mm-hmm. So I'm focusing in on a few series, the Bluegrass series for sure, our Upbeat Downtown series, which is got things like, we've got a Simon and Garfunkel group coming in. We've got a Taylor Swift tribute band coming in. Those things kind of fit in that series. Yeah. And then we've got a family series, of course. And we've got our theater camps and our children's show coming up, Lion King Jr. But the series that I'm most excited about is our Living Room series, which is hosted by Trent Wagler, who's the lead for the Steel Wheels.
He's fabulous, by the way. Laffer's putting that out there if you're not familiar.
He's great. Yeah. He's great. So he hosts the Living Room series, and we put a living room on this stage, and we invite artists to come in, and Trent will interview them and kind of get their take on music and their music and where it came from and how it feels to them to be professional musicians. And then we'll take a little break, and they come back, and they'll play a set. And oftentimes it's new music that hasn't been recorded. And it really is going to take off. We're recording it to produce a radio show.
Oh, that's great.
We're working on that for our Bluegrass series as well. We're excited. We have the first one in the can, which was Nat Myers. And so, really excited. Oliver Bates Craven is coming up in March, end of March. And we'll record that, and then followed up by Ordinary Elephant will be the last one this spring. And we're just starting to figure out the 25 fall living room series. So trying to do some things that people can identify Court Square Theater with and not, you know, try not to be all over the map, that here's the things that we're doing. We do movies on Wednesdays, and we've got a good crowd that comes for those movies. We try to do some art house movies, little more recent first runs, maybe a documentary here and there, something a little educational. And then we try to throw in at least one musical. You know, we've got Kiss Me Kate coming up next week. Top Hat is next month. So some of the older movies we've done, North by Northwest, Alfred Hitchcock. So trying to make them some interesting movies that you might not have seen on the big screen.
Some of the independent type movies.
We do have some of the independent movies, okay, as well as some of the older movies.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah.
I bet you like the bluegrass a lot, having your background in voice.
Yeah, I mean, opera. I've been around bluegrass all my life. When I was at the Kentucky Center for the Arts, we did a big bluegrass festival there. But I was the floor director for a television show called The Lonesome Pine Special. And I did that for 8 years. And that was broadcast through KET on PBS all over the nation. Mm-hmm. And got to work with a lot of musicians who were Rounder Records, which were musicians that didn't get much airplay.
Okay.
But very well known. So Sam Bush, Newgrass Revival, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones were born on that stage. Alison Krauss as a young woman.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah,
it was a great way to hear new music. It was a great experience to be able to work with those caliber of musicians. And my summer was always filled with 2 weeks of music. We shot 10 shows in 12 days.
Holy cow.
Yeah, but we all loved it because we had 80 hours of straight time and 80 hours of overtime.
Holy cow. It was a good pay.
It was a good payday. For sure.
I see that. How are you going to balance the theater's history with all this fresh programming and ideas? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, this has, in 25 years is not a ton of history.
That's true.
And I think, you know, as I've always said, in theater or in nonprofits, mm-hmm, you're always going to have to keep in mind what the founders and the originators of the ideas were, mm-hmm, and have that sort of as your vision and your moral compass. You owe it to them, to owe it to those people that sat down one day and said, let's carve a theater out of a car dealership. And then the Arts Council of the Valley taking over the being the driving force. And, you know, Arts Council of the Valley does stuff with visual art as well. We've got a gallery and we do public art. Mm-hmm. And one of the few places around that actually gives grants to artists to create artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that and theater are kind of unique for an Arts Council to have. And I think we all have a vision in mind of what we want to see both in art and public art and theater here in Harrisonburg. And we're trying to drive that and keep that rolling.
Yeah, you even put together a Court Square Theater Committee. I'm on that.
We do have a Court Square Theater Committee.
I had to be, you know. We've done stand-up here. We want to do some more, so. But also just, I feel just so grateful for the opportunity for our comedy production company. That was a big level up for us to partner with Court Square Theater. So I'm honored to be on there with the committee. What are you hoping to get out of us, by the way?
Well, I think there's a number of things. I think, yeah, you know, it can get to programming and bouncing ideas off of programming.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I think we've got a good focus. We want to encourage some more people to volunteer so we can have volunteer ushers. And we want to drive our membership up.
That would be great.
That I think is, for me, is really a top priority, is to drive the membership up. It's a really easy way to support the theater by becoming a member, and you get some perks here and there, early access to tickets for a show, and free popcorn.
Who doesn't want free popcorn, Laffers?
Right.
It's worth it for that alone.
So yeah, it's $100 a year, and it's really worth it, and it really helps us out. So, you know, the committee is going to kind of shape that, look at our marketing dollars and seeing how they're being spent. Are we spending it in the right places?
Mm-hmm.
And helping identify what we need to be doing to let the community know that we're here and this is what we're about.
Yeah, as you shift into the direction to make it what it's really going to be, how it's going to be identified, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm excited about that. We just started, Laffers, so stay tuned. Well, we've had, what, two meetings so far?
We've had some snow issues. We've had some issues. So we've now met twice.
That's right. So you know it's going to be great. Anytime you go through challenges, things end up really great on the other side. Oh, wow. I didn't show you always, but you know what I mean. What are some key lessons you've learned from the previous leadership roles that you feel you are bringing into this position? That's a loaded question, isn't it?
That's a loaded question.
I know, with your wealth of experience.
I mean, I think you have to be a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give your staff the tools they need to ensure they can do their job to the best of their ability and not having to be over their shoulder. You've got to trust your judgment in the shows that you're bringing in, and know that that's positive. And you've got to make a case for certain things. You know, if there's, you know, for instance, we really, really need a new ticketing system, new software.
Amen to that.
New software, yes, to make it easier for our patrons and easier for our staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to make a case for that. I'm happy to say that the executive committee approved it last night.
Yes.
So
I am thrilled. Oh my gosh, you guys, I am so thrilled about this. You don't even know.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
So, you know, making sure that when you do have large asks like that, that it is expensive to do
it
this.
Is.
That,
it is.
That you've done your homework and you've got it together. And then, you know, pay really, really close attention to the budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be cognizant of where you are pretty much every day, because we are a nonprofit and we are in challenging times, especially with live entertainment, the way that the industry has changed since COVID. So, yeah, I think those are probably the top ones that I have experienced and how I lead.
Okay, I have another curious question here.
Okay.
What do you think is the biggest change in live entertainment since COVID, in your perspective?
Well, certainly streaming services.
Absolutely, yep.
You know, that is a big thing. I mean, unless you're Taylor Swift or, as we said, Jerry Seinfeld or, you know, Chris Rock and some of the
household names,
bigger comedians, yeah, out there. Nat Bergazzi,
Bergazzi.
Yeah, he's funny.
He's hysterical. Do you know that he made $80 million last year?
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And
yeah,
he's
incredible.
Who's the female? Lori.
Leanne Morgan.
Leanne Morgan.
She's fabulous as well. Those are two incredible comedians.
And I think what's really special about those comedians is that they don't use foul language.
It's clean comedy.
Comedy. And so that makes a difference. But I think streaming has changed how you can see live entertainment. You know, even Taylor Swift, you know, they filmed the Eras Tour. And I have a friend who saw the film and really didn't feel that she needed to go see the movie, to see the concert, because she felt like she was there, and it was better being on film actually for her. And so, you know, getting people, as they've gotten used to being at home and using those streaming services and the convenience of their own home and their refrigerator and the pause button, I think that's changed a lot. Broadway has seen a decline. Even Broadway, you know, series around the country have seen it. But what's hurt most is the smaller organizations, and a lot of them could not come back after COVID. They had gone through all of their money, even though they'd stopped. Just because a theater had to stop having performances doesn't mean you can turn off the lights and everything's fine. You still got electricity. You've got heating. You've got water. You have to make sure that you go around every couple of days and flush all the toilets, because you don't want that to get backed up. Mm-hmm. You've got to pay attention to your building. It's your biggest asset. And so buildings sat for 2 years and it just had to have people taking care of it and pay the utilities. And a lot of these organizations didn't have 2 years of savings.
I see.
And And once we came back, you know, we were back, and then boom, another wave of it happens. And that just tells people, I'm not going out. I'm not going to go into a room with 200 other people, especially if they have, you know, if their immune system is down or mm-hmm. they're older. And so, you know, we've got to reteach people the importance of live entertainment.
Mm-hmm. And nothing like it.
Yeah. And why it's important. I've always said it. It's a quality of life, you know. Mm-hmm. Live entertainment becomes a quality of life issue for me. And it's something that, you know, when you come into a theater, whether it's music, theater, dance, opera, Broadway, you forget about your world for 90 minutes.
Yes.
You just, you don't worry about the electric bill, or you don't worry about the next thing. You know, you've got to get a new battery for the car, or get a new oil change. You lose all of that for 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the magic of theater is for me, is we're taking you on a journey, whether it is stand-up comedy and learning, because, you know, so many stand-up comics are, it's about them, it's about their personality, it's about who they are, telling stories about their families, and that's an intimate thing between a comedian and an audience member. And then you've got theater, who's telling a story mm-hmm. That you completely get lost in. Mm-hmm. And then I love things that have a surprise ending, you know, yeah. because you're so lost in it that you don't even think forward, and all of a sudden it's on top of you, and you're like, oh gosh, that's incredible how they wove that together to have that moment. So
I agree with all that. I would add to the stand-up comedy piece, I think the biggest reason why people laugh so much is when we are talking about our families or our life circumstances or experiences, and we're sharing that with them. They can see themselves or someone they know in that story, and that's what makes them laugh. So they're laughing at themselves or somebody else.
Well, and that's a good point.
Yeah, someone, it's very fun.
Someone said to me that they felt like theater was going to be coming back in a way that people are going to start craving to be with other people, mm-hmm. like-minded people, people who are laughing together, people who are crying together, people yeah. who are cheering together. You know, we had a large house in here for the movie a couple of weeks ago called A Real Pain, which is Jesse Eisenberg's new film.
Oh, well,
and,
to check that out.
Kieran Culkin won the Golden Globe for it, and he's up for the Oscar as well. But this audience went through that story together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was amazing that there, at the end of the movie, there was not a mass exodus. They almost sat around collectively looking at each other and trying to define what they had just experienced together.
And process
and,
it.
And, yeah. you know, people began to trickle out, but it took 10, 15 minutes for everybody to get out of the theater because they were having a conversation about what they'd just seen. And that, you're only going to get that with your spouse or your family if you're sitting at home. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get it with strangers who have a collective experience together.
I agree with that 100%. That's one of the biggest reasons I love to come to live theater and plays, is it does stimulate your own thinking, and then it stimulates dialogue. Whether you come with someone, you can start there and then you leave. I've done that a million times. Come here and I'll see something, and then my husband and I'll go have dinner afterwards or go home afterwards, and we're just talking about it
yep.
for a while, and I love that.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful piece. You can't get that. You can get that at home, but I like the point that you made. You're sharing it beyond your home with more people in the community, that experience, when you do come out for live entertainment.
Sure. And you'll be amazed at how many friends you'll see.
Yeah, I agree. And Core Square Theater is known for its diverse entertainment offerings. How do you plan to expand or enhance that programming? Or piece of it.
Yeah. So what's really amazing to me is that our high school here has nearly 70 languages that are spoken at the high school.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
And we have a large population yeah. of immigrants. We've already done a movie for the Nepalese community. We do have a Hispanic Film Festival in the fall.
That's great.
But I think getting into the Latina community, Nepalese community, Hispanic, whichever you want to say, but we have got these pockets of these people, and I would like Court Square to be a place for them where they could enjoy entertainment from their country, whether it be dance or film or theater or lectures.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, They moved to the United States for a reason. Mm-hmm. They are working in our community and making it better. And this court square should be a place that they recognize as a safe place for them to become and enjoy live entertainment, whether it's in their native language, mm-hmm. Like the Nepalese movie, or the Hispanic Film Festival, or it's something, you know, in English. But yeah, and we have a very diverse community, and this theater has got to support that for sure.
I agree. That's amazing. So you had a great turnout for that, the Nepalese?
Yeah, there were 200 people here.
That's amazing, Laughers. I love to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great.
If there are people that have artistic abilities in this diverse community and they want to maybe explore a collaboration with you to bring some programming here, what would they need to do?
Call me.
Okay. it's that simple.
Yeah, it really is that simple.
Okay.
You can call the Arts Council of the Valley or Court Square Theater. You can check out our website, which is courtsquaretheater.org. And just call me if there's something. I have musicians reach out to me all the time who want to play here, and mm-hmm. we try to come up with ideas of how they can. Mm-hmm. We do rent the theater. So, you know, if they wanted to rent the theater, we sell their tickets for them, help them market it. You know, how can there be a win-win for mm-hmm. These groups like Anoia Theater? I'm meeting with them this afternoon to talk about how we can get them in here.
That would be great.
And doing some shows.
So you're talking to Reese McClellan then?
No, I'm talking to Michael and his wife.
Trochia.
Allison. Allison?
Yeah. I believe it is Allison and Trochia. Yeah, yeah, I know them.
Talking with them.
Yeah, Anoia Theater is a newer theater group, and it's built like not a troupe. There's a name for it. I can't think of it right now.
I don't know enough about
them. A company.
Company. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, they've been performing in some interesting places.
Yeah.
And I'm anxious to hear what their vision is about what they could do here at Court Square.
Yeah, that's really great. We actually, Laughers, did a podcast interview with the Anoia Theater, so you can go back and look at that and listen to it and learn a lot more about them. So I hope that does work out. That's really exciting stuff that they're doing. So
yeah.
I'm going to send positive vibes over this meeting.
Cool.
You mentioned you love listening to the community, and that's important to you. What kind of feedback have you gotten from the community so far about Court Square Theater that you feel is helpful to you?
Everything seems pretty positive right now. I mean, we've got some people that, you know, certainly there's music that they want to hear, certain kinds of music, mm-hmm. Certain movies they'd like to see. There was a little bit of very little pushback on not having movies every single day and on the weekend. We were very movie heavy, but the movies weren't making any money.
Mm.
And so that's why we cut to Wednesday. But I got an email today from a guy that's a musician nearby, and he wants me to listen to him to maybe have him here at Court Square. So, you know, I get that. A lot of people just call and have ideas.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy to listen to those ideas, and I'm not opposed to taking advice from anyone if it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And in turn, doing things for Court Square that other theaters may be doing that works. I'm not opposed to stealing those ideas. I think it's important to be open to what we can do.
I think so, too. You have some cool stuff coming up. I know we've got Act One and kids summer camps. So
yep.
I'd love to share about that in case people locally haven't heard about that and they have children that want to try theater. This is a great opportunity coming up.
We have theater camps during the summer. Mm-hmm. We also have a dance camp this year with Cora Dance.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that at the community meeting.
So we're
right.
Very excited about that. And then a couple of weeks of theater camps. But the show we're doing right now, Lion King Jr., which opens next week, is rehearses for months. There are 66 kids in the cast. And the cast are so big, they've double cast it. And they're running two casts during the runtime of the next couple of weeks. But it's a great opportunity for these kids to get their feet wet in theater, to learn about theater, learn about the terminology in theater, stage left, stage right, upstage, downstage. And we got a great group that leads that. So those are real education opportunities for that. And then, of course, we've got our bluegrass coming up. And as I said, the Taylor Swift Band. And then, on May 4th, we're doing Return of the Jedi for May the 4th Be With You.
Are you really? That's fun.
We'll do costume contest and all that good stuff.
It's very fun.
Robbie Lyman is coming with his Strictly 70s show. So we'll have dress up for that as well. And working on a couple of secrets for the summer that may work out. We'll see.
Okay. If there are parents out there that want to get more information about the kid programming for the summer, how would they get that?
CourtScoreTheater.org. That's the best place to go to get that.
Okay. And when does that start?
They go on sale March 1st for the summer camps.
See, that's fast. And those fill up fast, so.
They do.
Bear that in mind, laughers. I'm telling you. I love it. What do you see as the biggest challenges face? Oh, we talked about that a little bit. How do you plan to navigate the challenges that facing smaller theaters today here at Court Square Theater?
Taking things very slowly and methodically.
Okay.
I think just really picking and choosing what works.
Mm-hmm.
Not just throwing something up against the wall and seeing if it sticks, being very precise in what we bring in and making sure that we know we're going to sell the tickets.
Mm.
We know we're going to be able to make money off of that show. So we've slowed down. We're taking a couple of steps back to look at what does work and being very methodical about what we book and how we book it.
That's very smart. This is how his experience is really helping our community and theater. So thank you so much for that.
You're very welcome.
How do you envision the partnerships with the local artists and businesses and organizations playing a role in the theater's success specifically?
Well, I think having this meeting this afternoon with Anoya, we've got a group in on Saturday, Art in Motion, which is doing a piece called Sculpted, and we're doing a partnership with them. Continue to explore those. We've got businesses that are sponsoring shows, which is great, which
That's awesome.
They're helping support the theater, they're helping support the artist, and in return, they're getting mentioned in our advertising and in our curtain speeches. So it's a win-win for any company to become a sponsor of the theater, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then other dance companies, other theater companies, we want to have that collaboration. We want to find a way to make the theater available to them at a reasonable cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because they may not have the coffers to pay the full rent, so we've got to figure out how we can make that equitable for both our organizations, because neither the artist or the theater want to lose money.
No one who wants to lose money.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you see yourself, do you perform now, by the way?
Nope. I stopped performing when I was 18.
Okay, so you went to the back part of the operations that early.
Mm-hmm. Moved backstage.
Okay. What's been your favorite role backstage? You've done a lot of different roles.
Oh, I think production stage manager is where I was well suited. I mean, I've been an electrician, I've been a rigger, I've been a flyman. I've done props, a multitude of things backstage, kind of a jack of all trades. But production stage management was where I really sort of landed. But having all that experience in those different areas of the theater really helped me with those puzzles that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Every single morning and putting a show into a new theater. So, stage managing is kind of my thing.
Now here's, again, helping us all get on the same page. What is a rigger and what is a flyman?
So a flyman is the one who brings in the drops that we had talked about.
Oh, okay.
They're bringing those in and out. And a rigger is someone who would, like when you go to a rock concert and you see all the truss that has all the lights on it and mm-hmm. the speakers hang off of it, those are rigged by riggers.
I get it.
So they are on chain motors that go up into the I-beams of the ceiling of the arena. And so when you come into an arena, you'll do spot calls, which is making a circle in chalk on the floor with an X, and you'll know that a chain motor is going to go there. So the guys in the ceiling and the rigger can drop down a line to that X and then bring up the rig up to get the chain motor ready to come up.
What's a chain motor?
A chain motor is what lifts up the truss and holds the truss in place. So if you go to a concert and you look up at the lights and all of that rigging up there, you'll see these lines that go up into the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And that's chain, and it's holding the truss in place.
Does that get dangerous?
It can be. It can be. I mean, guys in the ceiling are definitely wearing self-arrest, you know, harnesses. And if it's not rigged correctly, it can be very dangerous. And that's why there's certification programs to go through to become a rigger, because, you know, you're putting thousands of pounds over not only performers' heads, but audience members' heads.
What is that process like, certification? Is this multi-week, multi-month?
Yeah, it's. I mean, in theory, it's a lifetime of learning. You know, so you can get your certification, but you're always learning and you're always getting recertified. I mean, you've got to know how much something weighs, so that what chain motor do you use? Do you use a one ton? Do you use a half ton? How many span sets do you use on it? You know, what is the total weight going to be, and how's it going to balance out? There's a lot of mathematics and concentration. You don't joke around when you're rigging.
I would imagine not. I'm getting very educated today, Laffers. What is a span set?
A span set goes over the I-beam, and that's what the chain motor will clip into.
How long does it take to set up a rig for a show? Does it depend on the size of the show? The size of the, I imagine,
depends
the
on the
venue?
Size. Depends on the size of the show. I mean, you know, the show like Taylor Swift's show would take, you know, a few days to put in. But normally concerts will go in at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. They'll do an 8:30 or 9 o'clock show that night. And then it all goes back into the trucks and rolls down to the next town.
Wow. Three semis.
That was some of the Broadway shows, but like South Pacific was, I can't remember if it was six or seven.
Six or seven semis?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Phantom is, I don't know, 26 semis?
Holy cow.
Yeah, Phantom's different because Phantom has a stage deck that goes down on the stage and then a big, huge decorative proscenium, and there's actually two of them, so one is being installed in one town while the other's being performed on another town. And then all the costumes and rolling set pieces go to that place where it is, and then that's that floor and proscenium go to another theater.
And you organized all of that?
Not for Phantom, but but a lot of them, yeah.
And your role that you seem to excel in or like the most or both is the stage production manager. What goes into that?
Well, it's like I said earlier, it's my job is to keep the integrity of what the director and the designers had intended, so that it's consistent and it performs the same in every venue. So I really liked that artistic part. I loved being the production manager, you know, for South Pacific and some of the other shows, because that had to deal with getting the show built and working closely with the designers and the directors and then putting it into the theater and making sure that it would fit on the trucks that I figured it was going to take to do it. South Pacific was supposed to go into, I think, six trucks, and it went into seven trucks. So I had to figure out over the next few stops how to get that seventh truck onto the sixth truck so that we were only traveling six, because the entire budget was built on
six.
Only six trucks. It was also taking a little longer to put it in. There's an old story of the national tour of Tommy that they had planned for it to go in a day and a half. So they would come to the theater, the riggers and carpenters would come to the theater like around two or three on the day before. They'd get everything rigged up. So the next morning they would load in all of the lighting and sound and set pieces. And they had figured it would take a day and a half. Well, it was taking three.
Wow.
So it completely ruined their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't get from one town to the next town and get the show up in time for the show's intent to go up on Tuesday night. It was happening on Wednesday. So all those patrons on Tuesday had to be moved to a different show. And they started cutting stuff from the show, and there was stuff being left at theaters across the country. And it just lost so much money. It was a big debacle. So you really got to be organized up front and know exactly what it's going to take to put in a show, to take out a show, how many crew members they're going to need, how many electricians, local carpenters, local prop people, local wardrobe people need to be there.
Truck drivers.
Yes, there are a couple of companies, Clark Transfer and Janko, which are well-known
for doing
theatrical touring and concert touring.
I just feel like I've been taking a class today.
Well, because the truck is a whole different thing, too. You got to be careful about where you put weight in the truck.
If you
put too much weight on the nose, then it can make the back end of a 48-foot semi move around.
Yeah, I didn't think of that too much
on the back. So the driver can feel that as soon as they start driving. And they'll get, after the first stop, they'll say, we're a little nose heavy, a little tail heavy, need to
kind of balance it out from the front of the trailer to the back of the trailer.
Yep.
Or it's dangerous.
Can be.
There's a lot of danger in moving these shows all around on tour and actually putting them up in a venue itself.
Mm-hmm.
So people really need to know what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
I imagine there's different kind of insurance for this sort of thing.
There is.
How does that work? That's curious to me.
Well, I mean, there's all of the different theaters have insurance, and there's cancellation insurance and, all kinds of things like that. So, yeah.
That is so fascinating to me. You said that the culture and the arts are key to high quality of life. How do you see the Court Square Theater contributes to that in Harrisonburg?
Well, I think it's just what we were talking about, the diversity and being a place for all and, having programming for all and, being a safe, community, accessible theater.
Yeah. And it is, Laughers. We've performed here several times. First as X2 Comedy before we rebranded to FWAF Show, the Funny Womack and Friends. And we love performing here. And we also love to come as an audience member as well. It's a welcoming experience when you walk in the door. Of course, we get the popcorn. And they do sell beer and wine, by the way.
Oh, we have a full bar.
Yeah, and there's cocktails, too, and you guys do
special named cocktails.
Yeah, and sometimes you do that based on the production that's happening, right?
Yep. We've been trying to do some themed cocktails for different shows.
I think those are fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we've done that before for Christmas in the past, so that makes it a lot. You can look forward to that, so you can check that out. And then you have soda, water, beer, too.
Oh, yeah, we've got full concessions.
Yeah, and the regular theater concessions is candy and that kind of thing.
Yep.
And then also, laughers, if we're not familiar with this venue, in the same building, it's Capitol Ale House, so you can plan have dinner there and come here. And then there's also several other options in downtown Harrisonburg, which is really getting to be known as a culinary district too.
Yeah, we got some really great restaurants within walking distance of the theater and lots of great coffee shops. We have a new coffee trail that you can come and experience going to different coffee shops in our town. So there's a lot to do downtown, and it's all kind of within walking distance.
And then there's also Hotel Madison, which isn't too far.
Yep, right down the road.
If people wanted to even walk from Hotel Madison, they could.
Sure, they could.
They should plan probably about 15, 20-ish minutes,
not
maybe.
Not too bad.
But that's if it's a nice day, it's a great walk.
Yeah.
And you can make a whole day out of it here. Just putting that out there, laughers, for everyone. What would you say to someone who hasn't experienced a show here yet at Court Square Theater? What would you say to them to encourage them to come?
You're going to see great live performances in a very intimate setting.
Yeah.
You're right on top of the performers. So if you want to hear great music, or you want to hear great comedy, or you want to see a great show, movie, it is very intimate, and you can really be right on top of them and see all the action.
Yeah, speaking of which, that just made me think of other comedy they have here is Rocktown Improv, which is an adult improv troupe. And I know a lot of the members that are a part of that, and they are super talented, and it's a ton of fun. And I believe you guys are doing Rocktown Improv on First Fridays, right?
We do it the first Friday of every month, and it's becoming very popular.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then they also are doing Friendly Fables, which is a D&D themed improv show.
Yep, like a Dungeons
and Dragons. I can't remember how often. Yeah, Dungeons. Is it monthly, right?
It's every month.
Okay.
And it's currently it's on Wednesdays for the next couple of months, and then it's going to move permanently to the last Thursday of the month.
See, laughers, I mean, we bring stand-up comedy, but also I highly recommend the improv troupe. They're amazing. So as we wrap up here, how best can the laughers get in touch with you on social media or otherwise, or Court Square Theater?
Court Square Theater on Facebook. We have two places you can go to. You can go courtsquaretheater.org and then Arts Council of the Valley, which is valleyarts.org. And you can get to Court Square Theater from the Arts Council website. And they just got a brand new website.
I just saw it before I came here.
It is
very nice.
But if you go to our website at Court Square Theater, then you can see pretty much everything that is happening at Court Square right now.
I also love that you added the FAQs. Those are fabulous.
It's helpful. Very helpful.
Extremely helpful. I noticed the revamp.
Yeah, it's a good looking website now.
I know. I'm proud of you guys.
Martha did all that.
So. Oh, Martha did that?
Yeah, well, she worked with the designers.
Martha is one of the newer... Well, she's maybe a year here. She's been with us a year now, right?
Yeah.
Of course, where. She's fabulous, and she's doing a lot of the admin work.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good job, Martha. And thank you for joining us today and sharing some of your story and your vision with us. It's truly been a pleasure. And again, I feel like I've been in a master class of behind the scenes in theater. So thank you for that. And thank you again for coming on the show, Justin.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me.
You better believe it. And also, thank you, laughers, for tuning in. We are so grateful for all of your support and following this podcast. We continue growing because of you. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. If you enjoyed this podcast, give it a like, listen, share with a friend. It's available wherever you podcast. That's where you're listening right now. Or you might be watching on YouTube. Either way, we love it. Please also subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Funny Womax. That would be amazing. And don't forget, you can get a free audiobook, 30-day trial. That will help support the podcast as well. And we would appreciate that. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us. And we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to a FWAF show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to thefunnywomax.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.